RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome in one and all to the Tuesday, November 7th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Got a lot to, when do we not have a lot to talk about? A lot to get to today as we finish up week 9 in the NFL, heading towards week 10. Going to get into some of that action. And obviously, wrapping up week 10 in college football and looking ahead a little bit. We'll do more of a look ahead on Thursday to week 11. But look back at week 10 for everyone that's clamoring for the rankings coming out tonight. Again, we'll discuss that a little bit. Not much changes, I would anticipate. But big changes at the top, that is. Big changes in terms of the landscape of how it's playing out nationally. The Big Ten making a huge, huge hit. So we're going to get to all of that. Wanted to start a little bit today on a topic that it's topical in that we're getting towards the, we saw it with the releasing of Jim McElwain. We're getting, and we're going to have a very heavy, as we do every year with coaching changes in college football. And I want to talk a little bit about search firms, and that's been a big topic in the past of, you know, why they're used and what do they do and a little bit of that process. So want to get into that and kind of explain a little bit about what they do and why they exist and how they've come about and how the landscape of coaching searches have changed. And I've talked about some of it in passing when talking about, if you listen to my podcast on the rise and fall of LSU football and how that played out in the past couple of coaching searches and going back into the Les Miles days where, you know, you had, athletic directors getting worked over and getting hoodwinked into thinking certain things. That I've gotten into kind of how search firms and the tentacles of coaches' agents can have a big play into what goes on in the search process. So I thought it would be worth spending some time going into it. And basically, the nutshell of how coaching searches used to be handled in the past. Most athletic directors were former coaches. It was basically a job where there wasn't a lot of fundraising. There were some, but college coaches are a big part of what they've always done is gone out and speaking to booster clubs and, you know, and shaking hands with the fat cats that put money into the program. That was fundraising. So who better to do that than, Hall of Fame coach, insert name here at school, insert name here, bumping them up to athletic director. You have people underneath that do the day-to-day paperwork of administrating, but then you have the athletic director that's kind of the out front guy. And so you had a football guy in most cases. Now, there were some cases where you had, you know, a basketball coach that had a background, a C.M. Newton type of guy, and, you know, very instrumental, and no one probably knew the landscape of college basketball better than he in the basketball world as a whole with USA Basketball and whatnot. But most of them were football coaches. So when you had coaching openings and you had to make a coaching hire, those former coaches tapped into their experiences. They knew coaches. They knew kind of where to go. They knew who to talk to. Tell me about this guy. Tell me about that. But they knew where to go. They knew who was BSing them and who wasn't. They knew who was really responsible for successes and who wasn't. Maybe in some cases who was really good but really wasn't getting the support around them. All those things are really important to understand. And as I've explained in the past, it's not unlike any other business. If you're in a business and you work in it every day and you know the people in it every day, You know who's good and you know who's not. If you're not in that business, you can be easily fooled as to who's really good. I deal with that when I'm getting a car serviced or, you know, work done at the house. I mean, I'm relying upon trying to talk to people that know about that industry of who's a fair plumber, electrician, what have you. And I'm relying on other people. I don't know. I don't work with those people every day. So I tend to search. Well, so, you know, search and seek out people who do know. Well, those people, you're relying upon them being accurate and them being, you know, I mean, they're likely going to be, you know, honest to you, but their opinion, you know, they may be tainted by who they like and who they don't like. Well, that's part of what, when you're in the business yourself, you know who you want to do. Most people will recommend people that they know and who they like and who they're trying to help. And you can get some of that in the football business. Now, coaches tend to, you know, we'll help this guy, help that guy out. We're buddies. Push this guy. He'd be easy to work with, yada, yada, yada. But in essence, that's how it was done. You knew the industry, and you knew who to go to, and you knew who was good. Well, times have changed over the course of the last 15, 20 years, in that the athletic directors are coming more from the administrative end. They're a different job altogether. Very rarely do you have the former coach become the athletic director. It's now somebody that's from a business background, a marketing background, that's worked their way up being an assistant athletic director at other spots. Yes, they've been a part of coaching searches. Yes, they've done different things. But, again, they have to research, again, secondhand. They're not coaches. They don't know the football business like people in football know it. So they have to talk to people. Again, you're talking to people, and you're relying upon what they tell you. And you have no way to know if they're trying to help you or not. You know, they may be trying to help someone else. They may be trying to help someone else get a job. Oh, yeah, they may be friends of yours, but they're going to try to help another friend. Those type of things are, you know, dangerous and risky. And let's just call it like it is. Back in the old days when you made a bad hire, you gave a guy 5 years. You know, you didn't have buyout contracts. Guy moved on, you hired another guy, and that was that. Today, as we all know, the world has changed. You're paying a lot of money in a huge buyout. And we'll get into why that's taking place, too, where it's costly if you make a mistake. So, inner search firms. It's really a problem in an embarrassing situation when you have situations like Mike Price getting hired at Alabama. And there was kind of a history of him doing some things off the field that weren't embarrassing. Well, again, back in the old days, you didn't have social media, you didn't have the internet, you didn't have talk radio, you didn't have, you know, blogs like you see around, you know, every school and whatnot. So things just kind of happened and guys just went away and, you know, things took place. And, you know, can you imagine, you know, for example, when Bear Bryant was the head coach at Alabama, it was well known. Bear loved his Jack Daniels and Coke. And he'd leave because there weren't midnight film sessions back in those days. You coached on the field and you went to take a shower, and they were on their way by 6 o'clock at night. They were heading home. And it was well known that, you know, Bear Bryant was, he'd have a state trooper that would drive him to work and back home every day. And back home would, he'd leave, and it was pretty well known he'd close two or three saloons down a night, and that's what it was. Can you imagine that happening today? Of course not. Different world. It's just a different world where people will judge and, you know, everything's politically correct and you can't do certain things. And very often. You just have to be very careful with how you deal with things, you know, in a very private manner. And then what's private? I mean, everything, anybody with a phone, and who doesn't have a phone, your world is public. So it's a completely different dynamic than it's ever been before. So now it's become more and more important that you know everything you can about a candidate, that you know about their financial situation, their background, their family situation, who their friends are. Do they have any ties that would be, you know, considered improper to any certain group or anything that could be embarrassing? Very tough to do if you're an athletic director. You don't have anybody on your staff. You may even have somebody that's head of security, but that handles in a very small arena. They don't have the real connection. So how do you go about and vet all that information? I mean, certainly it's pretty easy to take Social Security numbers and, you know, find out credit checks and all that. That's, I think, pretty easy to do. But what's not easy to do is to get a full-fledged search. So what these search firms are for, they hire investigators. They have investigators on the staff, I should say. And that's part of the fee that you pay, is you get a fully vetted candidate that they basically know everything about the background, about the families and the connections of all the candidates and anybody that you'd consider. Those are very, very valuable. And if you were going to take an independent security person, an investigator, it would cost a lot of money to do that. And this is just part of the search firm that will do that. Here's what the search firm also does. They go out and they have social media experts that check into certain things and follow up on certain things. They have people that make contacts with friends and, you know, agents and people that can kind of get a feel for, you know, certain conversations and certain relationships that they might have. And then, of course, the search firm can make contact with the agent of the coach without in giving the university and the coach plausible deniability. Here's the other thing. It's now become popular to say nobody representing the coach, nobody representing the university has had any contact. Well, except here's what happens. You have the third parties, which is somebody that can maybe be a confidant of the agent and a confidant of the school, be kind of a third party, not representing either, but basically giving the school and the candidate plausible deniability. That happens a lot. How do I know that? I've been a part of it. I've been a part of, you know, I know a coach, you know, an administrator, and you have conversations. I can't tell them, you know, I can't tell them other than maybe conversations about whether I think so-and-so would be interested or not, or whether you're wasting your time or not. Other than that, there's not a lot of background, because I'm not someone that digs into the background. I know the person as I know them, and that's that. But, again, this gives an avenue for them to do it. The other thing is, when you talk about the cost of a search firm, they're about $200,000. And people will say, well, you spent $200,000 to get somebody you'd hire to begin with. Well, you know, that's like saying, you know, you look at the result and you think, well, that's all that matters. But it's the process that you go through to develop a comfort level with that candidate or not that will make that determination. Would I use a search firm if I was an athletic director? No, I wouldn't. I don't feel the need to, because I can get the information firsthand and know it. But these guys that are not, and ladies that are athletic directors, don't have that background. So they need that. They are hired as athletic directors for other things. And yet, maybe the most important move that they make is hiring a football coach. And if they make a mistake, they'll get fired. And if they get it right, they'll be legendary athletic directors. So that's basically what they do. Now, in terms of how to search firms, what are their qualifications to evaluate coaches? Well, in most cases, they don't have many. They may have people that have had background in football. But again, if you're not involved in it on a day-to-day basis, you have a little bit of a hard time. But again, they have the ability and resources, financial resources, to tap into football people and get information, get evaluations on coaches that can help them. And then it's about putting fits together. And it's about, all right, this is what the school's looking for, the type of guy, and these are the guys based on evaluations from football people who would be good fits. And I mention that because that brings in part of what I do in Landry Football Operations. You go to LandryFootball.com, you'll see Landry Football Operations is a big part of what my business is, and it's, you can read about what LandryFootball.com, Landry Football Operations is by going to LandryFootball.com, and we provide information to fans through LandryFootball.com. Landry Football Operations is a scouting and coaching consulting firm. What does that really do? People think that I hire coaches for people. Well, I don't hire coaches for people. I don't believe in that. I believe that that has to be something that ultimately comes down to the administrator. But what I do is evaluate coaches. I've put together a system, much like as a longtime scout, the college and NFL level, evaluating players. There's a certain set of criteria, critical factors and position specifics on every player, every position. And that's what we do in evaluating players. Well, there's no different in how I evaluate coaches. There are a set of critical factors and criteria. I've put them up on LandryFootball.com time and time again, and we've talked about them. How I evaluate coaches. How do you do it? Well, you put a grade on them. You go into in-depth detail based upon in-person and on-film evaluation of coaches, watching them at practice, spending time in meetings with them, which I've all done, because when you are involved in helping in a coaching, in a scouting consulting area, I'm helping staff sometimes improve what they're doing. It gives me access to what they're doing and who's really good, maybe who's ahead of the game, and maybe who's a little bit overrated in some cases. So it gives me that first-hand access to these folks to where I can put an evaluation on coaches, much like on players, in making a determination that a Jamarcus Russell is going to be a bust, but a Carson Wentz is going to be a star based upon how you evaluate and what you're looking for, and not just people who watch him on TV and say, boy, he's thrown for this many touchdowns and he's this and that. I saw him in this game and that game. He's going to be great. He's going to be a bust. You know, that's very amateurish, and it's, you know, blowing something against the wall. Well, no difference in coaching. It's who really does a good job evaluating them in all of those criteria and putting verbiage to support it and putting a number and then basically kind of grading them off and then trying to figure out where there might be fits. So that is something that a lot of these coaching searches do. They tap into, I know I've dealt with a lot of them. I don't know that there's a lot of people that do what I do, but I know that they deal with a lot of people in football that work in football that kind of give them maybe the same information. I like to think that mine is a little bit more organized and a little bit more detailed because I literally provide a scouting report on any coach that they want, as well as providing it to them on everybody so that they can sift through and see who might be really good fit. So not very difficult to come with lists. A lot of those things are generated and leaked out and, you know, talked about on radio, and you see them on the internet, these guys and that guy. And you look at, hey, doesn't take much to know that Matt Campbell's doing a good job at Iowa State, but is he ready? Is he good enough? What is his strength? What makes him really good as opposed to maybe what are his weaknesses? What would he need to do on his staff to augment what he does to take a bigger job than Iowa State and be successful there as opposed to be a guy that would maybe not be ready yet? Those are the type of things that I don't think people who are inside the business know and understand. So that is a real important part of using a search firm, is that you're getting their information, and you're getting information from people that are inside the football business. It helps those who are athletic directors who may not have as good a contacts inside football. They can certainly call football people themselves, but again, they can just get generic information, and it might sound good, but again, if I'm listening to somebody, you know, describe two plumbers, you know, both of them sound kind of good to me, and it's hard to separate. I don't know the difference. But again, a football person talking to a football person, a coach or a scout talking to another coach or a scout, is going to have a different language, a different ability to ascertain the truth as opposed to somebody that's not inside the football business. So what has happened in this whole process over the years is that the coaches have had a big advantage in that they got agents. So what has happened is the agents can control a lot of the narrative. Who are candidates? Who are good fits? Who might be interested? It is a cottage industry today that the media talks about. Well, this guy'd be interested, and I heard this. And I, folks, when the media tells you that this guy would be interested in that, they're getting it from agents. And it is very easy if you're the agent for, let's say, now I don't want to mention any specific coach, but a particular coach, you know, yeah, this guy'd be interested, and he's the agent of the guy. You can say that, but is he really interested? Or if it's put out there that he's interested, it creates a little bit of a nervous reaction within the own school that he works. And so when it comes time to get raises for his assistants and to get more staff added, improvements in facilities, yada, 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 that makes it much more difficult, you know, of a process to filter through if you're that school that's trying to keep that coach. And it doesn't hurt you because you've got plausible deniability. Hey, I don't know anything about that. I'm happy at ABC school. Well, sure, you're happy. But if the name gets floated out there, it makes you more valuable, or seemingly so, in the public. Well, the media is looking for information. So the media gets their information from the people who talk, willingly talk, and that's agents. But again, they control the narrative. Now, you will hear the media talk about, well, I talked to somebody associated with the school. There's a reason why they're mostly anonymous sources. They're anonymous sources because there may be one board member or a big booster who may not have as big of a say as they'd like the, you know, for people to think. And it usually leads down something that's not real accurate. But this is a big part of why schools try to get their own agents. And basically, if you think about it, a search firm is the agent of the school. And so the search firm can sort through some of that and allow the athletic director to do his own or her own work, but have somebody else that's kind of helping them through the process, filtering information, and maybe even throwing information out there to throw people off course. That's what it's for. So when you ask, is it worth it? Well, is $200,000 worth it on a search firm? Well, look at what these buyouts are costing schools. I mean, $5, $8, $10, $12 million buyouts. Look at what they're having to pay coaches. I mean, $200,000 is pocket change if that's what you're getting. $500,000. It is a resource that you can use, again, to get background information, to allow you to get more information than you could ever do as a university itself. And it's not a whole lot of money. And even if it doesn't pick your coach, it's just not really that much money when you consider the money that's wasted in a university setting. This is money that I think is well spent. And I think for some, it is a necessary thing. For others that have more seasoned football backgrounds, it would be not as necessary, or maybe not necessary at all. As I said, I wouldn't use one myself to hire a football coach. I love basketball, but I might want to use some resource. Certainly would use some people that I know in football that have relationships with basketball coaches to maybe find that out if I had to make that type of hire. But that's not something I'd be as comfortable with, because I'd have to rely on secondhand information as opposed to firsthand. So I hope that gives you an idea of an understanding of why the search firms were started, why they're here, why they have a value in terms of background, because background is more important than ever. Listen, guys are not any dirtier than they are today. Players, coaches, people did the same things back 50 years ago. Nobody knew about them. Today's age, everybody knows about them. And it is about the PR issue. I think there's a lot of that that takes place. A lot of these administrators want to see, how is this going to float up the PR tag? You talk about the whole political. You ever? I'm not a politics follower, but whenever there's a policy, it's floated up. They call it a trial balloon, so that you see where the public goes. Well, that happens a lot, where the search firms or people will float out, hey, Coach so-and-so is a candidate. We'll see how that's taken. Oh, we'd like that. Oh, you get a little bit of a feedback. I've been asked at times to comment publicly in the media about a candidate positively, because that was somebody that they were interested in, but their public, their fan base in the media were very negative about it. Well, there again, that's all part of the modern age. As a football guy, I don't worry about that stuff. You go out and hire the best coach, and people can criticize you all you want. If it works, you know, that's all that matters in the end. But very much today, a lot of administrators want to win the press conference. And it's normally the wrong thing to do, but it gives them some feeling, at least in the short term. It buys them time. It's all part of the process. All right, I want to get into some of the action this past week in college football that really jumped out at me. And speaking of coaches in trouble, definitely Kevin Sumlin is one. And I think more than in trouble, I think it pretty much signals the end for him. That loss to Auburn. This Auburn team is playing pretty well again, and they are just going to rule the day of the collapse against LSU, where they completely dominated that game in the first half. And just did not make the proper adjustments and caught themselves. But A&M is definitely, Scott Woodard and President Young are definitely in the searching mold. At the end of the season, Kevin Sumlin will be removed as head coach there. How about the Penn State-Michigan State game? And, you know, it was a weird game in that you had the long delay, but Michigan State had the delay as well as Penn State. And I still say that James Franklin, for as good a job as he's done, you know, I look at him and there is something that's lacking there in terms of a championship pedigree, in terms of preparation. And it is something that I want to see if he can improve upon, or if it is an issue that's going to stick with him. Because I just don't – that is the type of game that, you know, in last week you've got to be able to put away, and I think that's why they're a good team and a good program, but not a championship-level program. Wisconsin, steady as she goes, beats Indiana. Still not overly impressed with their explosiveness, but certainly very impressed with their consistency. Clemson, workmanlike job against NC State, getting it done. West Virginia at home, bouncing back against Iowa State. Iowa State kind of fell back to what they are, and it's a little bit limited with the explosive playmakers, and defensively I thought they struggled against West Virginia early, but fought back and made it a 2016 game when it was basically a 20-0 game. The story of the day, though, was the Big Ten. We talked about Penn State's loss. How about Iowa's beatdown against the Buckeyes? Unbelievable how poorly Ohio State played. And you start to look, and there's definitely some injuries on the offensive line for the Buckeyes. But they got dominated. And for a program to be where they are, to be completely dominated, That hit them hard in Columbus. There's no question about it. And Kurt Ferentz is, listen, you know, people will criticize how much money he makes and so on and so forth. Guy can coach, and he's not going to have top 10, top 15 teams every year. But his teams play hard, play well, and he's like 4-1 against top 5 teams in Iowa City. Just unbelievable, the big game coach. Georgia takes care of business against South Carolina. I see the improvement in the passing game. Certainly in this game, you could see it. Is it going to be good enough? This week, we'll break down in detail this Auburn-Georgia game this week that's going to be big. Notre Dame continues to control the line of scrimmage and control games. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, what can you say? A really bad defensive effort. Yes, there was a lot of offense. Those games kind of have have their own identity, and that it becomes you've got to get it and score. And when you're on the field that much defensively, you're not going to be very effective. But I don't see a national playoff caliber team out of the Big 12 this year. The only one close was TCU with their defense, but I don't think they are good enough. TCU handles Texas as expected at home. Michigan is playing better, and look out for Michigan against Wisconsin. They're getting better play with the young quarterback, and it'll be interesting to see. That could completely eliminate the Big Ten from the playoff conversation. Alabama did not play a very good game, left a lot of plays out on the field, dropped a lot of balls, but were able to beat LSU. Wasn't as close as the 14-point margin. You know, LSU has gotten better, no question, but still a team that is – been the benefactor of a very mediocre SEC beyond LSU, behind Alabama and Georgia, and an Auburn collapse. Very impressed with what Miami did against Virginia Tech. I still don't think Miami's gonna beat Notre Dame. I think it's gonna be a decisive win for Notre Dame. We'll get into that on Thursday, but nonetheless, I thought Tech would win. Very impressed with how Miami played. Outstanding performance. Washington continues to roll out in the Pac-12 North. And USC holding on against Arizona and Khalil Tate. How is it going to look, folks? I can tell you right now. If the four best teams truly are invited to the playoffs, then Alabama and Georgia are in. And Notre Dame is in. And I think Clemson is in. Now, again, Notre Dame, Clemson, Georgia, Alabama, they have to win. They have to continue to do it. But they're quite a bit better than Oklahoma and Wisconsin and anyone else, Miami. I think those are the four best teams, and I think it's really not that close. An unbeaten Wisconsin, unbeaten Big Ten team, whoever it is, in this case Wisconsin, you know, oh, you can't leave them out. Well, can't you? I'm not into the politics. Wisconsin's not close to being one of the four best teams. You only got Alabama, Georgia, Wisconsin, Miami, and Central Florida as unbeaten. I think Miami will come off that list. I think Wisconsin will end up getting beat too. And so it probably will end up being, you know, just one unbeaten team. Maybe Central Florida takes care of business. And then and likely Alabama if they win over Georgia. How does it look right now in the SEC? It looks like Alabama, Georgia. In the ACC, it looks like Clemson against Miami. In the Big Ten, it's Ohio State or Michigan State against Wisconsin, likely. Big 12, likely going to be Oklahoma and TCU. They play this week, and we'll get into that game, but they're likely going to have a rematch in the Big 12 championship game. And then the Pac-12, Washington and USC. And the AAC, likely Central Florida and Memphis, two good teams there. In Conference USA, Florida Atlantic with Lane Kiffin against North Texas. The MAC, either Ohio Akron versus Toledo. And the Mountain West, Boise Fresno is how it looks like. So that's how it's shaping up there. I want to move to some NFL action, some NFL thoughts as we are now heading into week 10. And again, we'll break down the games. But what jumps out at me is a couple of things. The Saints are for real. They're playing good defensively, and they're playing with a lot of confidence. Now, will they play as well against explosive offenses? Could they line up and hold up against maybe a Detroit or a Philadelphia type of an offense? They won't hold up as well, but but I think they're capable of winning. I think they're capable of making enough plays, and you're seeing them do it on defense and on special teams, and their offense is running the football. The Saints are really good. This is the best the Saints have looked since their Super Bowl run. Yes, I said it. Oops. Don't want to get ahead of myself. Doesn't mean I'm projecting them to go to the Super Bowl. This is just the best that they've looked at this point. Talking about looking good, the Rams, the difference coaching makes, this is a really good-looking team, and they are as good as the Giants are bad. The Bucks are bad and look like they're in a tank. Denver looks awful right now, and it'll be interesting to see if John Elway starts to get any criticism in the Denver media where he never gets criticized. This is a team that's been poorly constructed. In Philadelphia, certainly well-constructed, very good team. Carolina, folks, they're a different team when Cam Newton is running the football. And I know they've tried to look at, well, they need to protect them. Look, folks, they can protect him all they want. You put him as a pocket passer, he's not a very good decision maker. As a runner, he paralyzes defenses, both in the run and the pass, because you have to overplay the run element, and it creates great spacing and coverage. Atlanta's just not very good. They look lifeless at this point, and I think they're having a hard, hard time on the offensive side. Jacksonville, still playing very good defensively. They sat down Leonard Fournette to the off-the-field disciplinary issues, still dominated Cincinnati. Houston, tough loss, fought well against Indianapolis. The Texans are done without Deshaun Watson and all their injuries on defense. Very curious to see what Seattle – it's a week-to-week league, folks. Seattle thought they would win at home against Washington. What a big win for the Redskins. But Seattle – still a good team, but right now it is true that the Rams are the team to beat in the NFC West. I said it. I didn't believe it. I believe it now. They're the team to beat. I think Seattle can get them, but that'll be real interesting how my times have changed. Dallas getting it done at home against Kansas City. Must win for them. Kansas City certainly have struggled of late, but, you know, they're still playing pretty good ball, and they're still going to win that division and probably going to win it going away. Oakland kind of saved themselves Sunday night against Miami, keep themselves alive. Miami just has a ways to go offensively, but this is a pretty good team on defense and on special teams. And Detroit getting it done last night against Green Bay. This is a Detroit team that doesn't do the little things well enough. They're not very good running the football, because they don't block very well up front. That's an Achilles heel. And then on the back end of their defense, they make a lot of mistakes. They don't do the little things well, but boy, are they explosive on offense. They've got receivers. They've got tight ends. They've got a great quarterback. And I think that the defensive front is pretty good. This is a team that should win the North. When you look at them on tape, they are the team that should win the North. It's just the little things that prevent them from being where Minnesota is. Now, they can catch Minnesota. Minnesota's a better defensive team. Minnesota does the little things better. Minnesota's a better coach team. Zim has got his team playing well. I just think that Detroit's good enough with their quarterback situation to catch him. Very curious to see how that's going to play out the rest of the way. Well, folks, that's going to be a wrap for today, as we will turn our attention on Thursday to another big week, week 11 in college football, and some of the key matchups we're going to get to is we'll talk a little bit about Washington-Stanford, big game Friday night, Georgia-Auburn, we're going to go into that, Notre Dame-Miami, it's been a long time since that's been a big matchup, 1990, I believe, is the last big matchup they've had. And some other matchups like TCU, Oklahoma, Iowa, Wisconsin, danger game. Can the Hawkeyes go on the road after a big win? We'll see. We'll break that down. So we've got all of those games and plenty more to break down. Remember, keep it at LandryFootball.com for all your latest inside the film room analysis on the college game, the pro game. We've got great discounts, great benefits for you by being a member. Check it out. And take advantage of the discounts that we have for you. We appreciate you joining us. Talk to you again Thursday on another edition of the LandryFootball.com podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.